Welcome to the DigitalPoliticsPodcast.com show. I'm Karen Jagoda, president of eVoter Institute. My guest today is Dr. Joseph Tucker. He's the CEO of Enveric Biosciences, that's enveric.com, and the topic today is regulation of psychedelic therapies. So I want to welcome you to the show today, Joe. I appreciate you taking a few minutes to be with us.
Well, thank you very much, Karen. It's an honor to be here today.
Well, I appreciate that. Where do you see the greatest need for psilocybin-based therapies, and are they really safe?
So psilocybin-based therapies seem to have been showing some really great results in a variety of different mental health indications, and the ones where we've seen the most exciting positive results that also correlates to the greatest need are in the areas of depression, things like treatment-resistant depression, MDD, and then other indications such as PTSD. These are all historically very hard to treat areas, and where the clinical work that has been done, and all of these are very preliminary, of course, but where the preliminary work that has been done clinically does seem to show a really impressive response rate. So those I think are the areas. And I'm sorry, what was your second question, Karen?
The question is whether they're safe. And you're saying there have been some studies, there's been some trials, I guess, in other countries particularly. So you're saying that there's a lot of promise here, particularly for this depression and this kind of PTSD or other related kinds of neurodegenerative diseases that might be affected by them. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And yeah, so there have been a number of clinical trials with psilocybin itself as a molecule that's been around, well, since before humans, probably. It's been around for a very long time and been used quite a bit. There's a lot of, let's say, extant experiential data. It's really well known what the effects are, the side effects, the potential safety issues, which really made it possible to streamline a lot of clinical work that's been done by largely a lot of academic institutions have done sort of smaller clinical trials, a lot of exploratory clinical trials, and now we've had a few companies that have looked at psilocybin and related molecules. So there's, you know, we all know about the the effects, the hallucination, and vomiting, and a number of other effects that can come along with them that are dose dependent. Often. And so it's the safety is well known. We know how to work around that. And there has been some pretty exciting results from these early clinical trials that like many drugs that are developed historically, this has been true for hundreds of years. You know, as a pharma industry, we take inspiration from naturally occurring compounds that are often being used by indigenous peoples that have been used sometimes for thousands of years, hundreds of years in, you know, shamanism or something like that, whatever the indigenous medical culture is, because they found results. They found potent activity. So very often in pharma industry, we see that, we're inspired by that, and we ask ourselves, how is this working? And can we improve upon it? And the improving upon it, it's essentially what the pharmaceutical industry is. Improve on the natural compound to make something that's even more effective and even more safe.
Now, some of these are compounds that are not legal in the U.S. So say a little bit about how this general class of molecules is regulated right now.
Sure. So you know, you're absolutely right. The psychedelics, if it's, you're talking LSD or MDMA or psilocybin or ayahuasca, these are generally called class one drugs in the United States, which means they've been, onerous, the most negative classification. And it essentially says we have seen no pharmaceutical benefit or no human benefit for these molecules, but there is a high risk of abuse or of negative potential for humans. And that's the opening position for psychedelics in the United States. And frankly, in most places around the world, that's been the position probably for the last 50 plus years. What we are seeing is as this largely, as I mentioned earlier, led by academics, but now a number of companies including Enveric, are picking up the torch. Now that we've started to see some benefits from these molecules, you're starting to see a loosening of the regulations to a point. And so, say, some of the most flexible or least restrictive countries might be Australia, for example, or Canada, where you're starting to see loosening of restrictions, decriminalizations, permitted use in certain indications under the appropriate guidance and oversight of clinicians, et cetera. You're starting to see some loosening. And I can tell you from my own, our own communications with entities such as the DEA and the FDA here in the United States, they're very aware that there may well be some potential benefits to come out of this class of molecules. And they're doing the prudent thing, which is saying, show us the evidence. You know, we haven't seen the evidence yet. You show us the evidence that this is a beneficial molecule, and we can do something about that. And I, you know, I think that's actually a very reasonable, practical way to approach things rather than to just decriminalize or legalize really quickly before you really get your arms around how these molecules work, what is good about them, and what is bad. You know, they were made Schedule One for a reason. It wasn't for fun, right? So there are serious side effects that we need to be cognizant of and be able to manage before you can see health benefits.
And to be clear, there's some psychedelic-inspired treatments that are non-hallucinogenic. So some of those side effects have been eliminated through some recent research. Isn't that right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. So the earliest companies operating in this space, and certainly the vast majority of the academic work was based around known existing psychedelic agents which induce hallucinations. Now, you're starting to see companies like ourselves, Enveric and others, who are saying, gosh, you know, the biggest side effect in all of this is the hallucination. If you can reduce or eliminate that, retain the benefit, you may have something really, really potent, powerful, and accessible here. So yes, our leading program we're most excited about, we call it the 301, EDM 301 program, is doing exactly that, making molecules that are inspired by the psychedelics, so they're structurally similar, they bind the same receptors in the body, and they have, as far as we can tell at this point, the same mechanism of action for getting the benefit for patients, but the side effect of the hallucination no longer occurs. Certainly, we've only been able to do this in animals yet. We're gearing up for humans to come, but that's really, really exciting because that is the source of most of the concern, the hallucination and everything that goes along with that. If you can eliminate that and retain the benefit, it could be really, really really, really valuable. So that is exactly what we're trying to do.
And how often are these drugs used for recreational purposes, not medicinal purposes?
Well, certainly with the psychedelics to date, it's entirely been recreational. I mean, it's a black market, really. No illicit use, really, up until lately, just a few things being decriminalized. So it's entirely been, I'll say recreational, but I'll put a butt on that, which is, you know, the original uses have been prior to, say, modern first world people using it for entertainment or for recreation. Prior to that, these molecules were mostly used by indigenous cultures, actually in a therapeutic context, a therapeutic intent. And so while under the guise of, you know, or under the oversight of shamans generally, but this was, you know, targeted at a benefit. But in terms of modern medicine and FDA or Health Canada or EMA or whomever you want to say approved, it hasn't existed and it's entirely been recreational. So, you know, this is a good reason for the regulators to have some concern is that this has never been an approved product. No one's ever proven to the level that is required by every other drug No one's ever proven yet that these things have a benefit. So it's entirely been recreational until now. That certainly raises the bar for anybody trying to commercialize and create a new benefit. You know, the bar is raised in front of us because of the recreational use that's pre-existed this.
At the same time, I'm hearing you say more research is needed. So shouldn't NIH or whatever agency that's part of that family of research institutes be spending more money on psychedelic molecule research?
Yes, and in fact, we've started to see that. You know, I think 10 years ago, good luck finding anybody that was going to fund that type of research. But now I think the tune has very much changed. The early pioneers showed some real benefit and also showed that they were able to find ways to manage the risks, manage the downsides, and even attempt to control for the studies. And I think that's given a lot of comfort and confidence to the granting agencies. So we actually are seeing now granting agencies around the world making funds available specifically for this. It was, you know, it was pioneered generally not by granting agencies, but by, you know, individual wealthy donors and that ilk. But now we are starting to see the granting agencies get on board, which is a really good thing. Because you're right, more research is needed. One of the big questions still outstanding is what is the true underlying mechanism here? And there are a bunch of theories out there, some well supported, but it's being hotly debated in the top journals in the world, the top scientific journals in the world. You see every few weeks or every few months, one of the, you know, thought leaders in the space will come up with a theory and show some evidence, and there's three or four theories out there. So it's not settled yet exactly how it works. And we do need to know exactly how it works so that we can really control both the efficacy for patients and the safety, the side effects.
Well, now, in defense of what you're saying there, we don't really know how all drugs really work. They just kind of seem to work. I've been told by a lot of drug developers. So I think it would be good to use the same standard for psychedelically inspired treatments as well. But I'm wondering what you think legislators need to know about the community of patients and the doctors who are interested in using psilocybin-based therapies.
Well, I think the legislators are gosh, what an interesting breed, right? Because the people that make the laws are often not that well informed. So it's a really good question that you ask. And I think what legislators should bear in mind is, you know, number one, this class of molecules is clearly very potent, has a very powerful effect on the brain. Number one, right? So when you hear that, when you internalize that, and you recognize that there's the potential for negative effects there, then that means we need to be very cautious. In other words, in my opinion, it would be imprudent to completely legalize psychedelics as they exist today, because then you're going to start to see people trying to self-medicate. And in trying to self-medicate, not understanding the potential for side effects, not understanding whether or not a psychotherapy may or may not be involved, not understanding drug-drug interactions, there's a lot of potential for damage. There's a lot of potential for people trying to self-medicate and not helping themselves, maybe making themselves worse. So that is something that must not be forgotten. People often draw parallels to cannabis, and cannabis's decriminalization or legalization and sort of widespread accessibility. But we need to be very careful, because in my opinion, and I think many scientists would agree with me, that the psychedelics are much more potent effect on the brain than cannabis. And so the danger is greater. And so therefore, they should be regulated, but regulated the way drugs are regulated, right? Proper prescription, understanding of the side effects, understanding of the contraindications. And so certain patients shouldn't get them because they're too dangerous. And if they need to be administered in a certain setting, for example, then that should be the only setting that you get it. And so those are the kinds of things that legislators need to be aware of. Great potential benefit, but risk. So they should be properly handled and properly administered. And that's where the legislation, I think, can step in and make sure we don't go too far in one direction or the other.
And making available, especially in these times when we're seeing an increase in mental health challenges, it seems to me there's a need for creativity when it comes to treating those kinds of patients. So before I let you go today, I'm just wondering about your background and what drew you to Enverik.
Sure. So I'm a scientist originally by training, but have been a biotech CEO for close to 25 years now. And, you know, operating in this space, I have to say one of the things that just makes all of us at Enverik so passionate, in particular me, about this is this huge need for mental health improvement, that we've really got very, very poor treatments, and they're so widespread, so prevalent. I mean, everybody has someone in their family or someone very close to them, or maybe themselves. They've struggled with depression or anxiety, or you know, PTSD is just endemic right now. And yet we have so little to help people with. So there's a crying need that feels very personal to me and to everybody else, I'm sure. But then secondarily, the extreme power potential of this class of molecules is also very, very evident. And when I saw that, and when I saw how I thought the first class, the first group, the first crop of companies trying to develop them were working all with the naturally occurring compounds and not improving them, to come back, to circle back to how we started this call, not improving them the way the pharmaceutical industry does. I thought, wow, there's a real need here for somebody to apply, to have the guts to apply the pharmaceutical approach to these, you know, historically taboo molecules and get that benefit to the patients. That's what drew me here, is just this huge need to do this the right way so that we can harness this potential and help so many patients, which again, it's so personal, right? For me, for everybody, we all feel this. So let's get this done.
And have you been surprised at the reaction to your interest in raising awareness about this whole challenge?
You know, I have. What I've been really pleasantly surprised is how many folks step up and say, you know, thank goodness you guys are doing this. I know these things are really powerful because I have an experience with it. Or thank goodness you're doing this because this mental health epidemic is a huge, huge, huge problem. We've just got nothing. And even to have the regulators, the DEA, the FDA, everyone says, oh, the DEA, the big boogie monster. But you talk to the DEA and they say, thank goodness you're doing this. Do it right and we'll work with you. So that's been, to me, the most exciting piece has been how many folks have come forward and said, this is the right thing. You know, thank goodness you're doing it. Let me help you. Let me be a part of it.
Thanks to my guest today, Dr. Joseph Tucker, CEO of Enverik Biosciences, enverik.com, for more information. I'm Karen Jagoda, president of eVoter Institute, and you've been listening to the DigitalPoliticsPodcast.com show. Like us on Facebook at Digital Politics Radio. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.